Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Adi Oladipo here. Thank you so much for downloading Fight Night Extra. Remember, we're here every single Tuesday live on TalkSport to myself and the great Gareth A. Davis. If you can't join us live, remember to subscribe to the Fight Night podcast channel. So much other great content there as well, such as Fight Night, Fight of My Life, and even the Mike Tyson story, The Boy from Brownsville.
This is Fight Night Extra on TalkSport 2.
If you love your boxing and your MMA, then this is the show for you, Fight Night Extra, with myself, Adi Oladipo, and the great Gareth A. Davis, where we discuss all the latest from the world of combat sports. Today, we're going to recap a disappointing night for Josh Warrington, who suffered defeat in front of his adoring home fans in Leeds, Luis Alberto Lopez. We are going to hear from him, too, about what could be next. He's told TalkSport he still has aspirations to head to America despite the loss. We'll also round up the best of the action from the stateside. Terence Crawford with a stunning KO of David Avanesian, and Teofimo Lopez labored to a win over Sandor Martin. Elsewhere, we're going to hear from the Gypsy King Tyson Fury and Alexander Usyk's manager, Igas Klimas, both of whom have spoken to TalkSport of when we can expect to see an undisputed title fight. And we're going to round up UFC 282, a night to forget for Darren Till now. Yeah, really not on a good run at the moment. And a controversial win for Paddy Pimblett off the back of a controversial week for the Liverpudlian. This is Fight Night Extra.
And the new IBF featherweight champion of the world, Luis Alberto Evernado Lopez.
It's just frustration and annoyance, because there's so much to come after this fight. I kind of put internal pressure on myself.
Lopez taking it off the gears.
Nice. Oh! What a right hand from Terence Crawford! Flat on his back! He knocked him out! The King is still on top!
I don't understand how anyone thinks it was close. I easily won the first two rounds, and then the third round I coasted because my ankle was very sore. My ankle, I don't understand. People just don't like me, lad. You know what I mean? People just want to score a fight against me. I'm a nice guy. You know what I mean? Why does everyone hate me?
All right, Gareth, how are you, my man?
I'm really well. Brilliantly summed up there, Addy. A massively busy weekend for boxing and mixed martial arts. I'm one of mixed fortunes for different people. And it's kind of we come to a very fascinating juncture at the end of 2022. And I've got to say, the more that 2022 goes on in fight sport terms, the more I'm looking forward to the year being over.
Yeah, honestly, we've had a weird end to the year. And I think almost like the boxers almost just want to press the reset button as well and get going. Let's start with Josh Warrington. It's unfortunate for Josh Warrington. You think of sort of the big upset that was sort of the start of 2022 when he lost to Mauricio Lara. Start of 2021, apologies, when he lost to Mauricio Lara. And now he ends 2022 with not the same sort of biggest upset, but it's an upset nonetheless to Luis Alberto Lopez. What does Josh do from here on, do you think?
Look, let me say first of all that this was a very difficult fight for Warrington stylistically.
Yeah.
It was styles make fights, and this was one that was, we said it last week, I said it to you last week on the show. I watched Lopez against Isaac Lowe at Bethnal Green, it's a few months back now, It might have been earlier in the year, and I thought that guy is a tricky opponent for anyone. He's very unorthodox, he's very smart, he's very aware, and he's tough, and he's got his own style. Very difficult guy to prepare for. Mm-hmm. And Josh Warrington is very traditional, isn't he? And he wears you down slowly. Lopez got the best of the early rounds. I had him probably 6-2 up after 8.
Yeah, agreed, agreed. Great show, yeah.
And then Josh came on strong and does what Josh does, and he got dirty and he used his head and he punched to the hips and he did everything he should have been doing, what you and I would have done, because you had to go into desperation mode at that point. And you and I are very dirty when it doesn't go our way. We're just those kind of guys, aren't we, Eddie? You
know? We do like a fight. You've got to have a fight now and again.
Yeah. Listen, I'm going down. You've got to nail me to get me to finish me, yeah? Mm. I'm going to give everything I've got. And he gave everything he got. You could have argued that it was a draw, 6-6. I scored it 7-5 for Lopez. Josh did too little too late. And in the end, he was chasing the fight. And Lopez fiddled his way and was really hurt at the end of that fight. You were in the arena. I wasn't there. Mm-hmm. I was watching your brilliant broadcasting from here.
Appreciate that. Thank you.
And I was at home for a night for a change and watching all the fights and watching all the action from back here. And, you know, my master board was telling me, you know, watching it so closely that he probably didn't deserve to win. He might have deserved a draw. But stylistically, that guy was a problem for him. I think Conlan's a great fight for him, Michael Conlan.
Good shout.
I still think Lee Wood's a fantastic fight for him. But he won't get those unification. Well, he doesn't hold the belt. But there's no point doing a rematch, I don't think, with Lopez. I think Josh has probably, to answer your question, has probably only got maybe 2, maybe 3 fights left in him max. I've known Josh a really long time, and I know he wants an America fight, whether it be Madison Square Garden or Las Vegas, and he wants to take his fans with him. There's a very good fight with him with Lee Wood that's, you know, Nottingham versus Leeds, that will make him money, that will allow him to buy a couple more properties in his hometown of Leeds. I think Eddie Hearn, his promoter, Eddie, has got so many fights and fighters in America and Latin America that they might come up with someone we're not thinking about at the moment and get Josh a fight over there in America where the fans will be able to travel. He may not even be the main event. He might be the supporting act. Mm. And then come back and fight Lee Wood. That's what I think should happen for him.
Yeah, look, I mean, Josh has come out, and we're going to hear from Josh a bit later. He said, look, I'll go on the Canelo undercard. Like, put me on against anyone on a Canelo undercard. And look, we know Canelo must know a number of Mexicans in and around the feather and super featherweight that will challenge Josh. So maybe he is that, just to have that American card. One thing I will say before we move on, that we're going to talk Josh a bit more later, is that I'm happy that the scorecard went to the away fighter. Like, we've seen a few dodgy decisions, I think it's fair to say, over here in the last few years. And when it went 114-114, I was expecting it to go to Josh. So it was happy that it went the other way, because I don't want fighters to not want to come over here because they think they're not going to get a fair shake. So it was good to see it go Luis Alberto Lopez's way. Again, we'll talk about Josh a bit more later on the show. Let's talk about Terence Crawford, the Mr. Omaha, Nebraska, getting the knockout victory. And it was a beautiful knockout over David Avanesian. I mean, I did a preview video on my own sort of YouTube channel, and I said, look, Terence gives you a chance, but he has so many gears and so many tools that he's just going to find a way. And Avanesian, I think, done himself proud, but in the end, he's taken on the pound-for-pound number one in the world in so many people's eyes, and it was always going to be difficult.
There are lots of world champions, 75-odd of them, something like that at the moment. More if you count the women. But when you look at Terence Crawford, when you look at David Avanesian, the Russian-Armenian, with a chin hewn from granite, yeah, who no one has been able to budge for his career, and he's a very strong, late 20s, 30-year-old man. I think he's about 30. What you have when Terence Crawford popped him in the 6th round with an uppercut and a hook and just put him to sleep, it's because the shortness of the punches, the accuracy of Crawford, the absolute focus in the office. I've got to say, after that performance, if you are picking out a guy who is world class, who is the elite class, I'm kind of putting him pound for pound number one in the world right now after that performance on Saturday night. Because Avanesian came to win as well. And I draw that analogy with football because, my word, more and more and more, I think we should be taking Crawford seriously as a truly gifted fighter in this era. And it makes me even more pleased that he has Shaka Stevenson, the smaller man, training in his shadow, because these two fellas, Addy, they're so special. And the next time I go to America, I'm going to their gym and I'm going to spend a week around those guys because we need to treasure them.
Yeah, no, look, I completely agree with you with regards to Terence Crawford. We are looking at something special. It's a shame that he's 35 and it's a shame that maybe the CV is a bit thin. It's so difficult for me to, and I want to because I'm a massive fan of his. Just, I almost like his dry sense of humour as well, but I can't give him the pound for pound number one state. It's just because, I mean, there's people like Dimitri Bivol's just beating Canelo and an unbeaten Gilberto Ramirez. That's much more than David Avanesian. Do you know what I mean? That's the only reason I can't. But you're right. I mean, he is a treasure and it would be amazing. Honestly, you should, if you're going to go there, do some behind the scenes footage to see him and Shakur Stevenson in the same gym and talking to each other. I think it could be fascinating. A quick word.
Well, Addy, when I want you as my editor, I'll let you know.
That's okay. I don't know if my rate's quite high, but we'll work something out. Teofimo Lopez struggled against Sandor Martin. I think you might have seen, everyone's seen it now, the footage of him after the fight saying, have I still got it? Like, he almost questioned himself. Was he too hard on himself? Are we underrating Sandor Martin? Or rightly, is there something not quite right with Teofimo?
No, I think he's... Look, I think he's gone up a weight division. He was very powerful in the weight division he was. Sandor Martin is a very tough guy. You know, he comes out of that same Spanish... He's a Spaniard, isn't he? You know, he comes out of that same Catalonian union and power base in Spain as Germán Lezarraga and others who've come out of that area. Of course, look at Martin's record. He had that win over Mikey Garcia recently. Looked good against Jose Felix Jr. Unanimous decision. He's a very, very tough guy. And this would have felt like a world title, not an international title for him. Teofimo's gone up and he's at light welterweight or super lightweight now. And, it's a new class for him. Mm. He's got to fight the likes of Josh Taylor and Regis Progre and Jack Catterall and all these other guys. It's a different division.
Yeah,
it's a big move from lightweight to light welter. They're bigger men. There's no question about it. And Tio has been a bull in a china shop in recent performances. And he might just have to re-establish himself because he had an amazing run. I mean, you think about that run he had, Addy, and was like, you know, up until George Kambosos Jr., you know, he'd beaten Vasily Lomachenko. He'd knocked out Richard Comey in two rounds. Very tough guy. Knocked out Edis Tatley. Diego Madaleno had been a knockout win. He'd gone kind of 5-6 fights at world level. All right, Nakatani was a unanimous decision. But, you know, he was eating people for breakfast, eating them up. And I think he came up against, you know, someone difficult in Kambosos, and it just changed his mind. He's gone up a division and it's a bit different. And he's up, he's not bigger anymore. He's not the bully in there anymore. He's got to rely on his boxing skills more. I don't think it was that bad a performance on Saturday night. He labored a little bit, but so what? You know, he's not Shaka Stevenson or Terence Crawford. He's a different style of fighter. He's a rugged, aggressive counterpuncher. So he's going to come unstuck sometimes against the odd guy, and that's it.
Yeah, that is all it is, and I agree. I think he's too hard on himself. I think Sandor Martin is a good fighter. I was there for that Jose Felix fight in Spain, and he's a very good European champion. That's a world level, super lightweight. So look, I agree. I think he's a bit too harsh on himself, and we'll see what 2023 offers for Teofimo Lopez. All right, you're listening to Fighter Extra on TalkSport 2. Still to come, we're going to hear from Tyson Fury and the manager of Alexander Usyk, both of whom have been speaking to TalkSport. We're going to be chatting UFC 282, a difficult night for Darren Till. Also, Paddy Pimblett picking up what was 100% for me a controversial decision. But next up, though, we are going to hear from Josh Warrington, who has told TalkSport he will fight on despite that defeat to Luis Alberto Lopez at the weekend.
Has it been enough? He raises his arm. He thinks he's done enough. Lopez thinks he's done enough. What a fight. What a night. so, so close. Which way has it gone?
Ladies and gentlemen, after 12 rounds of action here in Leeds, we go to the judges' scorecards. Mike Fitzgerald and Adam Hight both scored this bout 115 to 113. For your winner, by majority decision, and the new IBF featherweight champion of the world, Luis Alberto El Venado Lopez.
Welcome back to Final Extra. Myself, Andy Ladipo, and Gareth A. Davis. Let's talk about Josh Warrington, who's told TalkSport he will fight on despite a defeat to Luis Alberto Lopez on Saturday night. The Leeds fighter was on the wrong end of a decision in front of a packed out home crowd, but was unable to get the job done. He spoke with Jim White on TalkSport and was asked what he plans from here.
It's just frustration and annoyance, because there's so much to come after this fight. I kind of put internal pressure on myself. I know the kid was going to start quickly, but it was like I were too anxious at the start, being too cautious about my jaw. And then when I finally started getting to it, it was, halfway through. You know, even though I felt I'd done enough to snatch it, the frustration comes with, if I'd have started a little bit quicker, then, you know, I'd definitely walked away with it. But it's all hindsight, isn't it, Jim? And obviously, I've just got to live with it.
You got to live with it. What can you tell your supporters listening on Talk Sport? Are you going to carry on?
Yeah, I'm going to carry on. I'm going to carry on and enjoy Christmas. And I think the thing what I'm going to do is get back in the gym straight away. I plan on just getting fat. But I think I'm just getting in the gym straight away, because at this moment in time, I just feel like I'd do myself injustice if I were just to walk away from it like this. Especially how I started off, like I say, but compared to how I finished, there's plenty left in the tank. So pick up straight away. I know that we can come back even stronger.
I know you had big plans to go stateside after this. Had it all gone well, do you still have those plans?
I don't see no reason why not. You know, but now people might look at me as that could be a risky big unification fight. But they might say, well, he's still a name. He's still got a fan base. Let's just have him as an opponent. You know, let's just have him as a voluntary opponent. It could look good on our record, and they may look at me as thinking it might be a steady fight to have. So the options still could be open there. And plus, there's big fights what take place in the States without belts as well. So the stickers on somebody's undercard, like a Canelo undercard, and I don't see why we can't fight over there. And obviously, we're going to take the support with us as well to, you know, cover any expenses.
One other one that was mentioned, Josh, as you know, was Lee Wood, maybe in Nottingham. Yeah. Is that a possibility?
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, if Lee wanted it, I'd be grateful for the opportunity. I'd have still had the belt. You know, you've got more of a bargaining towel now without the belt. It's his decision. But domestically, it's a massive fight for the UK, for Britain. I've gone from the driving seat to now the B-side, so I'm kind of... He's got the call, but no, if he wants it, then I'd be more than happy to take that one.
Josh, what do you want to say then to your many fans who are in touch with us today here at Talk Sport?
I just want to say a massive, massive thank you. They've been phenomenal throughout the years, and I'm talking like that's the last time, but you know, the weekend, it was the 12th time at Leeds Arena. I was at the weekend Matchroom's only male world champion. And I think the longest reigning who's been filling out these big shows, you know, take away... I don't think even AJ's been doing it as long as myself, you know, before he went to Wembley and all that. That Leeds Arena has been absolutely fantastic, and the people have turned out for many, 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 many years, paid their hard-earned cash, but more importantly, give me their time. And I'm forever indebted and forever grateful for that. So I do apologise. I wasn't able to get the W on the weekend, but thank you so much for the support that you've given me at the arena.
Josh Warrington there, speaking to Jim White. Look, you know, one thing about Josh, which I really love as well, he's not good at hiding. I know a lot of fighters, after a defeat like that, and it wasn't, you know, it wasn't a brutal defeat. It wasn't like he was knocked out, but they do disappear. They want to get their mind right. Josh is like, you know what? No, we're okay. We're going to take that defeat on the chin. We're going to have a little break and then we're going to get straight back to it. And what I did like as well is that he now accepts that he will be in his next fight, the B-side fighter. Yes, he pulls a crowd wherever he goes, but he's going to be the B-side fighter and he's willing to accept that as well. Look, we spoke at the top potentially about what next for Josh. Put your manager hat on if you can, Gareth, for a couple of minutes. What would you do next for Josh? What makes perfect sense now for a man that's had, what, two defeats out of his last four fights, obviously one being a draw in there as well. What would you do next?
Well, what I do is I take him to... Look, Luis Lopez was the number one challenger, remember? So he might take the rematch. They could take it to America on an Eddie Hearn card. I mean,
top-ranked fighter, though. It's going to be difficult, Lopez.
Yeah, but if they pay him enough, they could do it. They've got the funds to do it. I know he's a top-ranked fighter, but what they could do is they could say, look, we'll do the rematch. Can we have the rematch on one of our cards? Can we have it in Vegas? Top Rank and DAZN can do a deal. And the key is for Josh as well. He wants 5,000 of his fans to travel over with him to America. So that's a possibility, that kind of scenario. Or Hearn could release him from contract. He could fight on a Top Rank card at Pearl at the Palms or... T-Mobile Arena. It could be, you know, I don't think it's called the Hard Rock Hotel anymore, but they've got a great, I've been to some events there, some fight nights there in the Hard Rock Hotel. It's called something else. It might be the Virgin Hotel now. You know, it could be that kind of fight. And if it gets his fans over, you know, it could work for him. But I think that's what they have to look at. And there's the Lee Wood fight there, and it'll always work. But I think what disappointed me more than ever, and it's not a criticism of Josh on Saturday night, is that he seemed to do route one fighting and that there was a lack of versatility against a very awkward, tricky opponent, ultimately. And I wasn't that impressed with Lopez, if I'm honest, Eddie, either.
No, I'm very happy you said that, Gareth. And it's not a critique of Josh. I mean, look, we are broadcasters. You are a seasoned journalist. We're able and allowed to give our opinions. And I agree with that. Look, Josh is a fantastic fighter. But Josh, when I've watched him now and I've been lucky enough to go to a few of his fights, it is one way. It's one way. And it's ferocious, and credit to him. You know, he will dig deep. But sometimes you want to see maybe a bit of a something different. Because Lopez isn't the best fighter Josh has ever fought. Maybe a feint, maybe try a couple of jabs, maybe. It just didn't look like Josh had much of a B plan there, a B game, nothing. It was almost a case of, we're going to do it this way. And in the end, that way nearly got him a draw. But I think if he tried to mix it up just a little bit more, he would have exposed Lopez for what I think Lopez is. I think any of the champions out there are going to take that belt from Lopez, even a non-champion, because he's tough, Lopez. He ain't that good. He ain't that good.
Yeah, with full respect to Josh Warrington and Luis Lopez, it was a really frustrating fight to watch. Mm. It was a horrible clash of styles in the end. And unfortunately, Luis Lopez's horrible style won the day just. And that's what happened, you know?
Yeah.
I do think it should have been... What I do think should have happened, and this would have caused all kinds of mayhem, was that... I'm trying to remember the referee now. It was Bob Williams.
Bob Williams,
It was Bob Williams. Bob warned Lopez very seriously about holding in the 11th.
He did.
Yeah, I think it was. And he kept holding and he never took a point away. If he'd taken the point away, it would have been a majority draw, I believe.
You know what, though? I spoke to Bob after... stayed in the same hotel, we had a drink, and I said, that was interesting. I said, Eddie Hearn standed up and screamed about that, like the holding.
Yeah.
And I said, if you were to have taken a point away, it would have been a draw across the board. And he was like, he didn't think it was enough holding from Lopez. And I guess it would have been very, very controversial, considering that, you know, Josh Warrington with the headbutts. If he were then to have taken a point away from Lopez, it would have been, let's just say, social media and the boxing world wouldn't have been happy.
No, it would have gone. I would have gone apoplectic.
yeah, that's the word indeed.
The comments, it would have melted.
Oh, mate, it really would have. Away from Josh, a co-main event, a lady I know that we're both going to catch up with later, Ebony Bridges, got the victory over Shannon O'Connell. And look, what I will say about Ebony, and I was just telling Tom this as well, Tom Gray, what she lacks in boxing ability, she really, really makes up for it in just tenacity, sheer will to win. Her engine's incredible, by the way. It's actually insane. Like, she will go for the full 2 minutes. There isn't a breather in that 2 minute. She's strong. She's gutsy. And a credit to her. Like, the Ebony Bridges that we saw come over and fight Shannon Courtney, what, a year and a half ago, she would absolutely destroy that version of Ebony Bridges. She's so much better under Mark Tibbs than I thought she ever could be.
Yeah, she is. She's a little savage, isn't she?
Yeah.
She's 122 pounds savage.
Yep.
So, you know, I mean, she's a tiny little thing. She's got amazing energy. I mean, people rag me out. They still rag me about... They got me wrong about a comment I made. She's as different...
The Muhammad Ali comment.
Yeah, as Muhammad Ali was in men's boxing. Different, I mean, in terms of personality and what he brought to it. He was different, a free spirit. That's my comparison. I stick by it. She's one of the most different women we've ever seen box. She's a mathematics high school teacher. She's like a stripper in the way in. She looks like she strips down. And there's one reason why I don't mean a stripper. I want to recant that. She strips down in the way in because she's done it for years as a bodybuilder and as a bodybuilder poser.
Yes, yes. She's used to that. The way she poses, she's done that before. That's not new to her.
You and I both know her personally. I get on very well with Ebony. Gave her a lot of advice when she first came about, you know, don't use the F-bomb all the time. And she stopped doing that now and tried to guide her a little bit because she's definitely got something very special. She's a little terror in the ring. She's a little savage, yeah? And she just gives it all. And I sat here watching it with friends and while writing, and they loved it. They absolutely loved the fight. She entertains. She's very different. She does these weird unions at the moment, fans only and this, that, and the other. She's making a career for herself at a time when women's boxing's growing. And she's becoming one of the big characters in the sport. She's got a big social media following. Hats off to her. And she delivered on Saturday night.
No, she certainly did. And look, it's going to be big fights for her in 2023, whether it be Nina Hughes in a unification, Shannon Courtney potentially as well. So, yeah, honestly, I agree. Well done to her and the journey she's had in UK boxing since coming over from Australia. All right, you're listening to Final Extra on TalkSport 2. Still to come, we're going to chat some UFC. We're going to look back on UFC 282. Paddy Pimblett and Darren Till both in action. Next up, though, we are going to hear from the Gypsy King, Tyson Fury, who popped into the TalkSport studios last week to discuss a potential fight with Alexander Usyk in the new year.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
When when both fighters are willing, it's pretty easy to make a fight, and Usyk seems to be willing. He was ringside, he got on the ring apron, he didn't say much.
No.
He just looked at me, the ugly little man he is. Scary, actually, how ugly he is, but still. What was exciting was that Joe Joyce got on the ringside as well. Yes. He was like, I want some of this action.
We've been talking to Queensboro Promotions about that fight before. I'm talking to the Top Rank. As we speak, this morning, we had a conference call. All of us got together, and we are almost done, I wanted to say. It's not much to talk. Two heavyweights, best in the sports today, undisputed heavyweight, championship bout. That's what people need. That's what the fans need.
Welcome back to Final Extra on TalkSport 2. Myself, Adi Oladipo, the great Gareth Davis. Tyson Fury says he will not underestimate Alexander Usyk despite claims that he's too small to beat him. Fury also added that Usyk had an opportunity to fight him in Wembley last week, but the Ukrainians team were adamant for a date in the new year. Tyson Fury says he hopes he's a man of his word. Let's listen in now to Tyson Fury's appearance on TalkSport last week.
Usyk was offered the fight instead of Derek Chisora for December, and they said no. So they said, oh, we're going to wait till next year. So we'll see. We'll see how good the man's word is.
Yeah.
He's been undisputed cruiserweight champion. He's fought Joshua twice. I think he's had, what, four fights heavyweight now? So, yeah, we'll see. I think he's willing. He looks willing. I would like to think that there's not a man born yet that can beat me in my own era, for sure. But, you know, you can never underestimate anybody. I trained so hard for Derek, even though I've beaten him twice before. I put a nine-week camp in. I was celibate for 7 weeks for Derek Chisora. That's how much I respected him as an opponent. And I trained really hard for him. And it was like, everyone was saying, well, you've already beat the guy. Why are you doing all this sacrifice? I'm like, I'm making sure that he don't beat me in the third one. So even though that I'm a lot taller than this guy and I outweigh him by 2 or 3 stone, I would give him the utmost respect as a proper opponent for me.
Tyson Fury there with TalkSport Breakfast team. Very confident, as he should be, right? The number one heavyweight on the planet. And hopefully we are nearing this undisputed fight. And look, there's a discussion about the IBF belt, but hopefully we are nearing this fight with Alexander Usyk. Alexander Usyk, to be fair to him, has always said he wanted to fight in the new year. Like he never came out and said, I'd fight you next. It was always the new year for him. And I think it's fair to say Alexander Usyk will fight anyone, anywhere. I mean, his record tells me that. And if it is Tyson Fury next, I think the fans are in for something special in 2023. I mean, I can't take all my money now for that fight. Honestly, wherever it is in the world, I'm going to be there because I think that's going to be something special, Gareth.
It is. But I think what we need at the moment is all well and good Bob Arum and Frank Warren saying, you know, the fight's going to move ahead this week and Middle East and all well and good Egis Klima saying that and Alexander Krasiuk Alexander Usyk side, but we need to hear from the Middle East. We need to hear that they are putting up the money and that they are going ahead with it. Qatar is in a different region where the World Cup's going on to where we expect the boxing to be. So we need something to come out from the Middle East. I mean, I'm digging around at the moment trying to get something because it's 10 days now since the Fury Chisora fight, and they said, you know, within a couple of weeks. And so we need a little bit of meat on the bone, a little bit of clanking of the chains to get some resonance for what is going to happen in 2023, and which I believe will be one of the biggest years in boxing. I'm coming out saying this right now, Addy, one of the biggest years in boxing we've had for a very, very long time.
Yeah, you talk about meat on the bones here. Let's hear it now from Usyk's manager, Egis Klimas. He also spoke with TalkSport and says the fight is likely to take place in March next year.
Yes, Jim, definitely. We've been in negotiations even before the fight. That's why we showed up to the fight. We were invited. We were treated very nice by the Queensboro. Amazing, amazing fans in the UK. We love UK fans. I couldn't believe that somebody told me what the fight is going to be in a stadium December 3 in London. I was flipped out, and I said, they're not going to get the people. And 60,000 people was sold. Atmosphere in our stadium, it was amazing. And I mean, we've been talking to Queensboro Promotions about that fight before. I'm talking to the Top Rank as we speak. This morning, we had a conference call. All of us got together, and we are almost done, I wanted to say. It's not much to talk. Two heavyweights, best in the sports today, undisputed heavyweight championship bout. That's what people need. That's what the fans need.
Alexander Usyk's manager there, Igas Klimas, speaking to TalkSport, saying the fight is likely to happen in March. Is that wishful thinking? I mean, Tyson Fury at the end of that, and you were there, end of the Chisora fight, spoke about having to have surgery on his hand, which I don't know. What does that leave him out for another 6 to 7 weeks? Is it wishful thinking that he will return back to the gym so soon after surgery and then be in physical shape to have a fight against Alexander Usyk? Are we not really looking at sort of April or May?
Yeah, maybe. But I mean, but we need a date. It's as simple as that. We know that. I think it's his elbow rather than his hand. Yeah, but what I'm led to believe, I may be wrong, but that's, I had that conversation with Fury myself, and he said elbow. I'm pretty sure it might be his hand as well. It may be something I don't know. I think that it's more exploratory than anything. I think it's just niggling him in camp. It's also
maybe like a floating piece of bone or something, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Just a, you know, a bit of chip bone or whatever it is. And you know, he's 35 next year, so he is starting to have wear and tear on his body, Eddie. It's not unusual for that to happen. So yes, if it's April and May, fine. But let's get it over the line. Let's know when it is. Let's see when we're working towards it. Because if we leave it too long, Alexander Usyk's been out for too long.
Yeah,
without a fight. You know, because it's interesting, the year's stacking up at the moment. There's two axes. It looks like Fury is looking at Alexander Usyk and maybe Joe Joyce if he wins, and Anthony Joshua. And it looks like Eddie Hearn's gave away on Saturday night to an interview. O2 Arena, it looks like Anthony Joshua's going to fight. We haven't got the date. And it looks like maybe it's Dillian White for him and Deontay Wilder next year.
Yeah.
He's kind of converging. Two axes going away from each other. So, and also fascinating that Eddie Hearn talking about who's got the better resume. I think he brings this up once a year, doesn't he? Who's got the better resume, Anthony Joshua or Tyson Fury? And he thinks it's clearly Anthony Joshua.
AJ, and you can confirm this before we have this little debate. When he says AJ has the better resume, is he talking win or losses, or is he just fights?
He's talking
about wins.
No, he's talking about better resume. Well, I mean,
if it's fights, I think he's right. If it's who AJ's actually been in the ring with, I think AJ has a better resume than Tyson Fury. I'll take AJ's over Fury's. But if we're talking,
because he's been in the ring with Alexander Usyk and lost twice.
That's what I'm trying to say. Yeah, but see, this is the thing: the losses don't help him. I'm trying to say, if it's just who you've been in the ring with, then I'd have AJ. I think AJ's resume is a bit more solid than Tyson Fury's.
You know, is a loss a success or a fail?
A failure.
Yeah, so they don't count in your... you can't say, well, I did 19 business deals and 17 of them lost me £25 million, but I made...
No, it's slightly different in boxing, isn't it? Because, no, it's slightly different in boxing. You know this, Gareth. You're more of a boxing man than I am, but at least we're getting... We don't see these fights. For us, the argument has been, get in the ring and have these fights. Let's see. And if the best are fighting the best, and that's what we've always asked for, you're going to lose. The greatest have lost. Yeah. If the best are fighting the best, it's fine. If he's getting hammered by the best, and I don't mean to be disrespectful here when I say, like, Chisora, for example, if he's losing like that, getting stopped and knocked out, then okay, yeah, you're right. Then you could have 30 losses. Or Rosado, for example, that doesn't count. But if you're fighting the best and you're competitive, then you're going to lose. Someone's going to lose.
Yeah, I think for me, Tyson Fury's got the better resume, regardless of who either of them have fought. Because... I say this because I'm doing the lineal now. Mm-hmm. I think, remember Joshua was a big favourite to beat Usyk before they fought. Do you remember that, by the way?
Not in bookies' eyes, but not in boxing people's eyes. No, exactly.
Yeah. Usyk and Fury are always going to be Joshua's trickiest opponents in the division.
Yeah, no matter what. Yeah,
Deontay Wilder cannot be blown. Tyson Fury dismantled and made him idealist 2015 in Dusseldorf.
Dismantled who?
Vladimir Klitschko.
No, he didn't dismantle him.
He did.
No, he dismantled.
I'm not saying he beat him up, but what I'm saying is he dismantled a technique that had allowed that guy to be heavyweight champion of the world for 9.5 years.
Agreed.
And he did not have a clue against Fury. He did not know how to throw the right hand lead without throwing his jab. Fury out jabbed him, outmaneuvered him, was too big for him, too clever for him, and exposed him as an aging champion.
But that's what Fury, that's the style that Fury's got to do. But like AJ that's could never do that. AJ's a wrecking machine. So AJ, if AJ's going to beat Klitschko, he has to knock him out. And that's what AJ did. So AJ beat him the way AJ could beat him. Fury beat him the way Fury could beat him.
Yeah, but Klitschko was 40 then. Yeah.
It was 38 and a half against Fury. He's in fantastic shape. You know when people say that 40 thing? I agree, that's his age, but he's not 40. I mean, there's 40, like me and you know 40, and then there's Vladimir Klitschko 40. That guy is the best specimen of boxing athlete I think I've ever seen. He is incredible. So when people say he's 40, he's like 30-year-olds now.
Yeah, he is. But I think... Look,
we need to be in a studio together to do this one.
I know. Look, let me just.
This is a half an hour show. Go on.
Tyson Fury versus Dillian White. We know what happens. Tyson Fury versus Charles Martin. Oh my word. Tyson Fury versus Dominic Brazil. Oh my word. Tyson Fury versus Eric Molina. Tyson Fury versus Vladimir Klitschko. Right. So just wipe all those out. Yeah. Right. Tyson Fury against Carlos Tacho.
Well, no, we can't do that. I'm not having that. I'm sorry. Can't just do really you can't just do it. I saw Steve Cunningham put it on his backside. I just can't just wipe them out.
He got up and beat him. And he beat the crap out of him.
Yeah, but when you say wipe him out, it's not like we know it would have been easy work back then. He would have beaten him because he's the number one. But I don't think he would have beaten him with one hand behind the back when I've seen a cruiserweight put him on his backside.
I carry on. Carlos Takam, Joseph Parker, Alexander Povetkin, Andy Ruiz, Kubrat Pulev. Sorry. You know, and then...
But the argument isn't whether or not Tyson Fury will beat them, because we know that. The argument is, who's got the better resume? Who's got the thicker resume? And in terms
Deontay
of...
Deontay Wilder and
Klitschko. That's the thing.
Two of the Wilder fights.
Yeah.
Certainly two and three. One, two, and three, and the Klitschko fight, because he's got up four times against Wilder off the floor to beat him, you know?
Which is astonishing, given that. Yeah.
He's got a better resume. If he loses to Alexander Usyk, I think it's debatable.
I want to see you in person have this debate. I want a half an hour debate here. I can't do it right now. I've only got 5 minutes. Well, I've got five seconds. My producer said I've got a wrap.
Well, call me an effing Uber and I'll get over there.
You could invite me round. Could invite me round next to the fireplace. We're going to have a proper debate about this. Glass of wine, we do this.
All right. I get friends on, I get an audience.
Let's do it. Audience of Gareth. Get Eddie and Frank in as well. Let's really debate this.
In 2023, we are going on tour with an audience.
I think we should do it. I think it'll be fascinating. It really would. Yeah. All right, you're listening to Fight Extra on TalkSport 2. Next up, we're going to switch gears and talk MMA and mixed night for British stars Darren Till and Paddy Pimblett.
Especially the way I talk, and I'm not going to lie, I expected to finish him. But give Jared Gordon his due. I don't know, you know what I mean? People just like to hate on me.
29 now. I've been at the top of the sport since 2017. I'm not retiring, this is not a retirement speech. I'm 29, that'd be stupid to retire, but I'm on a bit of a losing skid at the moment, I really am. I just want to say to everyone there, whether you love me or hate me, I'm sorry.
Welcome back, you're listening to Final Extra on TalkSport 2 with myself, Addy Oladipo, and the great Gareth Faye Davis. So let's switch our attention now to UFC, UFC 282. Was in the weekend. The big talking point about UFC 282 was Paddy Pimblett in that controversial and highly favourable decision. But before that, it's been an interesting week for Paddy Pimblett, Gareth. Obviously, you probably would have seen the back and forth with Ariel Helwani. He's now clearly in the good books of a certain Dana White, who absolutely adores and loves him. What do you make, before we get into that actual debate he had with Ariel Helwani, what do you make of Paddy Pimblett and this sort of meteoric rise that he's been on the last sort of 12 to 18 months?
Well, I mean, I'd use the 10-80-10 rule that John Jones and I talked about probably 10 years ago now. well, pretty much that long ago. It might have been a bit later than that, but 10-80-10 rule is that 10% always love you, 10% always hate you, and the 80 in the middle swing with a pendulum. I think after his last performance, when he gave the most amazing speech about a friend who... The world was at his feet. And it's a very... it's a very swing with a pendulum audience. They're very coquettish, the UFC audience. You're a star, you're the hero 1 minute, and then you're a coward and an idiot the next. And I think it does swing like that. It's a very brutal world. And, you know, when someone like with the personality of Paddy Pimblett, who's a cheeky chappy with his tongue in his cheek the whole time, who never takes life too seriously, who balloons in weight between fights, who's about, you know, about a pie and a cup of tea, and is very brash in his way. I think when things go wrong for you, they go wrong very badly. And when they go right for you, they go very right for you. There's a lot of salutary tales of success and failure in the UFC, and he's on the wrong end of it at the moment. It's a tough old game for him right now. He didn't look like he won the other night, but he got the decision. I think I've got it here somewhere.
Yeah, he did get the decision.
He clearly didn't win. I've watched him, but he didn't win.
No.
He lost that fight. I don't know if you agree with me.
No, he did. He lost the fight. He lost the fight. 2-1, 3-0. Like, he lost the fight. There's no way, no matter how you score, even if you're a big Paddy Pimblett fan, if you score it round for round, and that's kind of what you're supposed to be doing, taking damage, etc., ground control, he lost the fight. You know, I always like to see how a fighter sort of takes sort of newfound fame, not just fighters, anyone in general, how they handle fame as opposed to what they were before. And look, Paddy Pimblett's always been that cheeky chappy, but he's always been, I thought, just almost a lovable rogue. Like, you kind of just like him because he's a funny guy. He's got the Liverpudlian accent, the weird haircut, and you just take to him. I've started to see a shift, and it's difficult, right? Once money comes to you and fame comes to you, I think if you can navigate that circus, congratulations to you, because it's difficult and many don't. But I know some people like Ariel and some don't. I'm a big fan of Ariel Helwani, and the attack on Ariel Helwani when he's sitting alongside Dana White and he's talking about Ariel and pointing fingers like, you know, you only get fighters on for money and you take money out of a fighter's pocket because you make money out of the interviews and this lie and that lie. And I'm like, 1 second. Wait a minute. And Ariel, I mean, if you're going to come for a journalist, make sure you got your facts straight, because you journos remember everything. And Ariel literally just launched into this assault on Paddy Pimblett. And it was a 10-7 round for Ariel, I'll put it that way. I mean, if you're Herb Dean, you stop the fight, you wave it off immediately, because Ariel destroyed him. And I think Paddy Pimblett's come off looking really bad. And he might like this role as a heel. He might want to take that heel role. But I don't think it's a good thing to do, especially, and this is not a dig at him, especially if you're not that good a fighter yet for me. I mean, it's okay doing that kind of role when you're a Conor McGregor or even a Chael Sonnen. And I think, you know, sky is your limit. I'm not convinced about him as a fighter yet at the top echelon of the UFC. So if you want to take that high horse that you're doing right now and you lose, it can be a slippery slope very quickly.
Yeah, you have to be careful about who you choose as your friends and who you choose as your enemies in the slippery slope of snakes and ladders that the UFC world is. It's very Machiavellian.
Well, very.
Just to point out, first of all, Ariel and I have been very good friends for a very long time.
Mm.
You know, I feel like an elder brother to him in journalism in lots of ways. And, you know, and he's been extraordinarily successful with pioneering mixed martial arts journalism. He's amazing, done an amazing job. And now that the shackles are off and he's freed from, he's got his own kind of canonical ownership of what he does. Mm. He's not within the broadcast sphere of the UFC. He's much more flagrant now in his assumptions of people and his honesty about what's going on. And yeah, he roasted Paddy Pimblett. He destroyed him.
Yeah, he did. It was difficult.
He submitted him. He knocked him out. He battered him around. He literally beat him up. If that was it, if they were in the cage together, he'd have beaten him up. Senseless.
Mm.
That's what he did. And obviously he felt very hurt. Ariel has a very sharp edge when it comes to dealings with around Dana White, obviously, because they don't get on
at all.
Very, 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 very difficult relationship between the two men. And, you know, I know Dana White as well, of course, and I've never had that with him. And Ariel feels very hard done by in lots of ways. And you know, Ariel can be quite cruel in his own way as well. But he clearly brought out all his talons for this one and stuck them all in Paddy because he felt hard done by in the way that he'd been handled. I think knowing Ariel, he does try to... Sometimes he suffers from a little bit of schadenfreude where he does kind of... he's got that style. It's kind of Louis Theroux style where he kind of sits back and lets other people shoot themselves in the foot sometimes. But in another way, Ariel has a lot of great intentions towards a lot of the fights and loves what he does. Mm. They'll have to, it's part of the game. He'll get Paddy on at some point and, you know, they'll speak again, I'm sure.
Hopefully they do, because again, in terms of characters in the UFC, there aren't that many. I mean, there used to be plenty, and Paddy's definitely one of them. So hopefully, I want him to have a long career, because if he has a long career, it means bigger events over here in the UK, because he's becoming the face of it. So hopefully we do see a Paddy that I think does better in the octagon than he's doing right outside the octagon right now. Very quickly, I want to touch on Darren Till. 5 defeats and 6 now for Darren, which is incredible when you think of when he was coming through as a 170 fighter and you think it was just inevitable that he was going to win a title. I thought he's going to win a title. Like he's got everything. He was so much bigger than everyone, hence the nickname the Gorilla. He was just, it was perfect. Now, it's just not working out. He's obviously tried to go to Sweden and train with Hamzat Chimaev, and obviously they're building up a really good relationship outside. You know, he's left the family alone and everything, and that's not worked out. And he spoke on social media, he left a message on social media that he's going to take a little break from MMA, and I can understand why, because right now it's just not working. I was watching his fight, and it's funny, he was a big 170, he's just the normal size 185. Like maybe he needs to squeeze back down to 170. I'm not quite sure what he does, but nothing seems to be working for him right now. And he's actually quite lucky he's not been cut. Like 5 defeats in 6, we know what Dana's like. You lose 2 or 3 in a row, you're gone. 5 defeats in 6, he's quite fortunate.
It used to be like that. It's not so much like that anymore. That's the old school way. It was 3 defeats and you were out normally. But that was when they had 190 fighters. They've got thousands and thousands of fighters now. And, you know, if they work on a lot of these cards around the world, they work. Look, this applies to Paddy Pimblett as much as it does for Darren Till. There's a saying that it always gets darker before it gets light. Yeah. And that will apply.
I like that. I might have to nick that. I'm writing that down right now.
As we finish off tonight, Addy, we've had a bit of fun today, and it's a serious business of people fighting, and you know, people get very hurt when they fight, and mentally, emotionally, and physically. And obviously, Darren's in a difficult place. I mean, I've followed him really since the Donald Cerrone win back in 2017, and when you think that it's Donald Cerrone and Stephen Thompson who has lost 2 back-to-back victories. I thought he even lost to Stephen Thompson. I was there that night in Liverpool. I thought Thompson won 3 rounds to 2. But Tyron Woodley, Jorge Masvidal, the win against Kelvin Gastelum, and then losses to Robert Whittaker, Derek Brunson, and Dricus du Plessis, obviously from Plessis from the weekend. So he's fighting the very, very best, the very elite fighters. He needs a bit of time off. You're right. He's not a big middleweight. Middleweights are huge. Middleweights are the equivalent of cruiserweights in boxing, I think. Because they're very, very big men, even though there's a 15-pound difference there. MMA fighters really boil down. They're really big guys. And Darren's not a small guy.
Darren's massive. I've seen him. He's massive.
He is, but his greatest successes came at welterweight.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, it's a shame.
And you know, I just think, I've said this all along, Colin Herron, his coach, who started K-Bon in Liverpool, who I'm a huge fan of, I love Colin Herron, known him for many years. Darren maybe needs to go and work in Sweden, but in a few other places. And, you know, he's only, what is he? He's 29.
That's it for this week. Thank you so much for downloading our Fight Night Extra. Remember, we're back every single Tuesday for more great content. And if you miss us, make sure you subscribe to Fight Night to catch up on all our other episodes.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.